welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott celebrate the very, very, very long life of Scott as it is his birthday. And to celebrate his birthday properly, Rob pulls out an Italian wine from Tolani, their Val di Sante from Tuscany. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
I'm feeling old, Rob.
You should be.
Old.
Folks.
Old and decrepit.
You look like shit. Oh, no, so actually, you don't look like shit. Well, you look like shit's brother. On tonight's episode,
Schitt's Creek's brother?
No, just
there
shit.
There wasn't a brother on that show.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, the brother of Schitt's.
Oh, whatever.
No, actually, he was the brother. He was the main character.
There was a brother, yeah.
But it meant there wasn't a brother of the brother.
There wasn't a brother of the brother. There's a sister of the brother.
Yeah.
And she had a brother.
Mm, that doesn't count.
It does. On tonight's episode, we celebrate Scott's birthday. Well, in 2 days. Yeah. His birthday, technically, well, not technically, actually is on Valentine's Day.
Yeah?
It is. I know.
We've told this story many times
before. We have, yes.
When I was young, I wanted to be, and my name changed to Valentino. So ridiculous.
Are you Italian, Scott?
No,
he's not.
I've been
folks.
Confused because of olive skin tone and all that bullshit, but no. Nope.
Racist, mostly. They said you were. No. Yeah, I mean, no, Scott is not of Italian descent, folks. No.
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 He's from Bulgaria, is where he's from, so.
No.
No? Oh, you look Bulgarian. Sorry. I mean, not all of you, some parts of you. Look very small, like you're Canadian, but that's not the point.
Canadians make very fine bacon.
It's fucking ham. Canadian bacon is ham. The Triple B does not like Canada, by the way. Or Canadian bacon, because it's ham. It's ham that nobody wants to eat. You know, they're like, oh, we have bacon. No, you don't. That's fucking... Canadian bacon is ham, folks. It's ham.
It's delicious.
Not as good as bacon. We don't even know what bacon is. We have Canadian. You have ham, assholes.
Well,
it's not the same thing.
It's not. It's delicious.
No, it's not. It's fine. It's disappointing. It's not bacon.
What's the premium American product that traditionally had been served with Canadian bacon? Now it's not.
Roofies? No.
Of course you think that.
No, I don't know.
McDonald's breakfast sandwich.
That's ham on that sandwich.
Not originally. It was Canadian bacon.
Fucking ham.
It was Canadian bacon originally.
It's like a Lunchable.
Oh, God.
But it's like ring bologna, folks. Mm. Rob the Wine Guy had some ring bologna for dinner tonight. It's not a good dinner, folks. Don't do that.
But don't...
What?
...downplay the quality of a top-notch ring bologna.
This is a mid-tier, at best, in his opinion.
Well, usually there's
ring bologna.
Low-tier and top-tier.
Wow, you've brought this tier to the house before, but that tier has apparently fallen down a little bit. It was fine.
That was for dinner?
He lives with a bunch of children that are sick, so, you know.
You just ate what you could.
Yes.
Did you fry it up?
Yes. Raw ring bologna?
It's baloney.
Oh, yeah. It has a first name. And that fucking dog upstairs is going to be in it if it doesn't shut the fuck up.
In its first name?
It's going to be baloney, yeah. Yeah, Ellie, if you can hear her, she's throwing something heavy around upstairs.
We've told the story about introducing a dog into the Dern household. And she's growing immensely, and she's taken a taste to paper. Particularly paper that is... bound into a book.
And she's a flaming dumbass is what she is.
What dog eats a book?
Fucking dumb dog.
Two of them.
Well, DeSantis burns books, so she eats books.
Well,
what the hell?
Well.
You know. Whatever. Not the whole book, just a couple pages.
Oh.
But.
She is from the South.
Yeah, but she has bigger paws than he has feet. So there's that. He has small feet. He's a small man. He's not in the elections anymore, so. It's just Donnie. You know.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And, you know. But on tonight's show, we are celebrating with a great wine. Now, presumably a great wine. A well-reviewed wine. This is not an old wine. This is a wine you can buy currently. And you're like, well, Rob, you pulled something out that's young? Yes, I did, but I ordered a replacement already today, yeah. Which will be in this week. And this is a winery that I have some experience with. I've had a couple of their wines. Enjoyed them immensely. I mean, think the world of the two wines I've had. I also own a couple vintages of this wine, probably because I'm expecting it to be good. So if it's not good, I'm going to be very disappointed tonight because I'm going to pretend like it's good regardless. This is Tolani. I'd say it's Pierluigi Tolani. That's the owner's name. And this is his, or their, Val di Santi. Val di Santi is like their mid-tier kind of wine. Tolani has a base wine. It's around $20. It's Al Tasso. And that's a blend of Sangiovese, Cabernet, and Merlot, I do believe, in equal parts. Mm. Then Val di Santi comes in the mid-30s. It's somewhere between... It fluctuates. I've seen anywhere from 35 to 40 in Ohio. I'm sure around where you are might be somewhere between 30 and 40, somewhere in that range. $40
on wine.com today, right currently. Now.
But it is 50-50 Cab and Cab Franc.
Somebody has a soft spot for Cab Franc.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
You?
Wilfred Wrong? Oh, it's Rob the Wine Guy.
No, I don't have a soft spot for Cab Franc. That's Petit Verdot.
You love Cab Franc, too.
Beyond that, they have, as I mentioned, the legit Cabernet, and that's 100% Cabernet. It's around $40. It is fucking fantastic. An amazing, amazing buy. Then they have Perlui, which is a Cab Franc, 100%. They have Pico Nero, which is 100% Merlot. I'm assuming the Pico Nero and the Perlui are somewhere in the $40 to $50 range. I've never seen them for sale. I would buy them if I saw them, though. The Al Tasso, as I said before, is around $20. And then they have a few different Chiantes. Tolani, his winery, he started that, I think, in the late 90s. He bought the ground. The vines for this wine were planted in 2000. So you're talking 24-year-old vines. But it was 19-year-old vines when this was bottled because of the 19 vintage. So a relatively young winery. But Mr. Tolani, he, I think, immigrated to Canada in the 50s. And he always said he's going to come back to Italy and start a winery and marry a woman. And apparently never married a woman. But he made a fuck ton money in Canada because he came back and bought a lot of acreage in Chianti Classico. And he started this winery. And so I look at Tolani as one of these relatively young wineries, but one that is showing so much promise. And when we read the reviews a little bit later, you'll see what we're talking about. But having tasted some of their stuff before, they knock things out of the park. This isn't just like a winery also that, oh, that's pleasant, that's a nice drink. No, no, no. We're talking about seriously, seriously good wines and blends. So, yes, they're doing the Sangiovese stuff. They're doing Chianti. They're doing Gran Selezione. They're doing that kind of stuff through Chianti Classico. But a lot of their stuff that's really well known are these Bordeaux-centric kind of wines. You know, they're using Cab. They're using Merlot. They're using Cab Franc, right? They don't call this a Bordeaux blend, but normally you're going to see more than two grapes, but it's close. We're using the Bordeaux glasses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pick and Arrow, best price I've seen online, 70 of your American dollars.
Could be. Yeah, well, Merlot in Italy, 100% Merlots, those are really, really highly sought after. Great, great wines from good producers when you see that. So that wouldn't surprise me much. I would spend that on it if I saw it. Just because I like their other wines so much.
The Cab Franc, the Perlu.
Yeah.
Perlui. Three and a quarter for a case. So that's...
Is it a 6-bottle or a 12-bottle?
Wait, that has to be for a case. That's...
That'd be a lot for a Cab Franc.
That's insane. They're showing that. It's $325 for a bottle.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it is. I mean, not knowing the wine itself... Who knows?
It's just, let's find this out. Let's do a little more searching on the Perlui.
But this wine itself, as I said, 50-50 Cab Franc, 16 months on French oak. And it is grown, well, the wine, it's all state. And so, and the estate is located within Chianti Classico. Namely, it is in the commune of Castelnuovo Barradenga, I believe is what it is. And it's one of the southern communes. So you've got a special wine from a special place.
Where the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles hang out. That's what kind of name that sounds like.
It could be. They're eating pizza right now, and they have a rat. You know. Yes. Scott making great references here.
Louis.
Yeah, you can tell. He writes my jokes. He writes that jokes. Some of them are stinkers, folks. You know. Well,
you would know about stinking.
Yeah, certain parts of me. But nevertheless, folks, we're going to take a break. But then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey, everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So off the air, Scott has verified that Père Louis, Tolani's Cab Franc, is actually $325 a bottle. But guess what, folks? They only make 50 cases of it. 600 bottles for the entire planet Earth.
It's at least for the 2018.
Wow. Okay. Well, that explains it. I mean, I don't think that it's this Cab Franc, but I mean, they only have so many acreage. So if we drink half of this bottle, is that worth $325? I'm just asking for a friend. It's not like they have 85-year-old vines. They don't have that, so...
So it's not like it's a 100-point rated wine. James Suckling scored it at 95 points.
Well, I mean,
a lot of his points.
Yeah, but let's get back to this, though. Gaja is up in that range, right? I mean, great Barolo and stuff like that. But, I mean, where is the... I mean, it's 20-year-old Cab Franc, right? How do you determine... the 18 vines that you put a lot more Miracle-Gro on those or something? I'm just...
Miracle-Gro?
I don't know what he's doing. Oh, I guess they're green, right? But whatever. I mean, that's bold.
You're collapsed.
That's bold. That takes some huevos right there.
Oh, I found another place that's offered. Theporium.com. Theporium. P-O-U-R, like... IUM.
Yeah.
Can't say I've ever got a hit on this website before. Mm. 360 of your American dollars. They have 6 left in stock.
Bottles?
Yes. I wonder how long they've had 6 left in stock.
That's 1% of the total production. okay, that's fine. But like we said, like I said, actually, you didn't say shit.
This is in Winnipeg, Manitoba, so it's not available in the States here. This is Theporium in Winnipeg, Manitoba. So it's $360 Canadian dollars.
So it's $5 here.
It's still a lot of American dollars. No, I would. What's the conversion rate now?
I don't know.
$1.40 maybe?
Okay.
So
still.
$200-some bottle of wine.
It might be a questionable use of your money, we're just saying. Probably good, but a questionable use of your money.
We'll find out what we think about the
Valdez. Buy 10 of these for that, but okay. Nevertheless, the reviews for this wine, it does have some reviews.
That's right. This is Wilfred Wong. You know, why am I even telling you?
Wrong. Wilfred Wrong.
Oh, shut up, Scott. You keep your mouth shut, you old bastard. Anyway, it does have some review. I did not review this wine. I focus a lot on Indiana fruit wines now. It's fantastic. Oliver wines. That's all I taste. All day long. The same ones. Did you know the lemon wine tastes like lemon?
That's surprising.
It Shocking. Is. It's from Indiana. I thought it would taste like cat piss. Strangely enough, did you know that cat piss tastes like lemon? I only know that because times are hard for me. Anyway, the wine enthusiast, they gave a 91 of their points. Like anybody, anyway, he wrote, a generous, evocative nose of cherries, fennel, orange peel, and medicinal herbs set the stage for a classic palate of cherries, fennel.
Closet palate?
Classic. Oh, I mean, you just interrupted me. So it says, an evocative nose of cherries, fennel, orange peel, and medical herbs set the stage for a classic palate of cherries, fennel, and sambuca flowers. Sambuca flowers. It tastes like sambuca flowers. Yeah. Grounded in iron-rich soil and wet slate. Tannins that grab hold of the tongue and an unapologetic heat round out this structured, elegant Tuscan red. Then the Wine Spectator. They gave it 93 of their point. They said, a polished red. This offers plum, black, where's the fennel and cherries, blackberry, blackcurrant, leather, and a hint of wild herb aromas and flavors. Balanced and harmonious, with refined tannins this time, gracing the long iron tin finish. No heat, apparently. Best from 2024 through 2040. Then Robert Parker, he wrote, or someone from Robert Parker wrote, from the estate's Twenta San Giovanni Vineyard. This is a blend of equal parts Cab and Cab Franc, aged in oak for 16 months. The Tolani 19 Valdesanti is quite generous and rich, with thick layers of dark fruit, black cherry, pencil shavings, tar, and licorice. Best after 2022. None of those wines, reviewers, have the exact, they didn't taste the same wine.
Well, one thing that is consistent, there's a lot going on in this wine. If we believe these differing opinions that don't share one.
Well, not all the opinions have been given yet, Scott.
And oh, Lord.
This is James Suckling, and you're not. Anyway, I also reviewed this wine. It's not Chilean, but I reviewed it. And I provided it 94 of my points.
Don't you live in Tuscany, James?
I do, actually. That's strangely enough.
They haven't kicked you out yet?
It's Tuscany, Montana.
Okay.
It's very nice there.
I'm sure it is.
Dusty.
Right about this time of year.
It's a store right down the road where you can gamble and buy cigarettes all in the same place. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's welcome to Ohio.
Yes, but this is a gambling cigarette store. It says on the top.
Gambling cigarettes.
No. Gambling and cigarettes, yes. I think they spelled and wrong, but that's Montana. They can't barely speak English there. We have no listeners in Montana, mind you.
Well.
It's because there's no one that lives in Montana, but still. Pretty aromas and flavors of currants, asphalt, and bark fill the glass. Fucking it's medium to full bodied with creamy tannins and a long flavorful finish, unfiltered. Drink 2024 and onwards. Asphalt and bark.
So much for a lot going on. Was there a dog in there? It's so, is that supposed to mean wet dog?
Currents, asphalt,
woof,
and bark. Tree bark, stupid.
I wonder if his bark.
It's very refined.
His dog barking. Eats books.
That's the refined part that someone was talking about.
Jesus. So much for all three wine reviews suggesting that there's a lot going on other than barking.
Sniffing glue. What the fuck was all that? My God.
I love this. Dog?
Elegant, evocative noses of cherries, fennel. Palate of cherries, fennel. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Quit copying and pasting shit.
Well.
And sambuca flowers.
I have to say, I've never heard of sambuca flowers.
No. No. I've heard of sambuca.
I love sambuca.
Didn't know there were flowers involved in that.
Love sambuca.
That was really great. So, 294 is 93 and a 91.
James gave it a 91?
94.
94. That was
James. The enthusiast gave it 91.
So, wait, his review that included bark?
Bark.
Was a 94.
Yes. Currents, asphalt, and bark. 94.
There's an asphalt, all right.
Oh. Well, once again, folks, great comedy writing by Scott.
Well, that's great comedy writing by James Suckling.
I don't think he was the major dipshit in that bunch. They were all dipshits, quite frankly. That was all very poorly done. Very poorly.
The duplicity is...
Get your subscription money back, folks.
The duplicity is concerning, but...
Apparently, Ellie upstairs is wrestling something. Hopefully, she loses. All right. On the nose. I do smell red currant right off the top. A little menthol. Do you smell the bark?
I don't. But I'll tell you, it's a wonderful nose.
And the licorice is back there, too. If you can hear us over the ruckus that the damn dog's doing. She must be having a lot of fun.
I dare say, for young wine, this is a more mature nose.
Well, I mean, Cab Franc, once again, will add a floral element to it. So you have, having had the legit is a very, I wish California tasted like this. It's just, it's exactly what I want Cabernet to be. Slightly austere, tannic, gobs of dark black fruit, but once again, held in check by the girth and the heaviness of the wine. It's just a wonderful, grippy, great, great, great wine. One of my favorite Cabernets of last year that I had, quite frankly, was that Triple B also said, I would like some more of that, and drank like 17 glasses if she could have.
Thank you. May I have another?
Uh-huh. It was that. It was like, down, open the hatch. What in the fuck ton dog? Fuck. Jesus, man.
Apparently the Amazon delivered the puppy toys.
Everything's a toy. Maybe it's a book she's ripping apart.
I'm going in. Well, I tell you, the Wine Spectator hit a home run. I don't know that it's iron, but there is a minerality about the finish.
Iron tin finish. I will agree with that. It's a strong minerality.
For it to appear and then stay into the length of the finish is impressive. Generally, minerality appears in the mid palate.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll flush into the finish a little bit. This isn't that. This has a distinct front, middle, finish, and the minerality appears and is throughout the finish.
And the finish is very, very long. I think the front palate is red fruit. I think it's going to soften a little bit here as we continue to drink it, and we will. A lovely expression of savoriness. This wine is very savory. And what I like is the front palate reminds me of Cabernet. The length reminds me of Cabernet, but the flavors, you see a little bit of that prettiness of a Cab Franc. You see, well, the red fruits, obviously, of a Cab Franc. It's such a nice little hybrid of the two. It doesn't taste really of Bordeaux either. It tastes more Italian, too.
Texturally, I think it's got that little shimmery Gina Lollobrigida about it. There's just a certain sexiness about the texture of this wine. It's sleek.
It has a sleekness to it, certainly.
And sometimes a younger French can be a little lean feeling on the palate.
Well, also,
it doesn't have that.
This wine is perfume tinged on the mid palate.
Yeah, there you go.
So as you go in, you get a little burst of, is it violet?
And normally you don't see that floral element really manifest itself that much on the palate. But with Cab Franc, a very good Cab Franc like this one is. I mean, this is a very, very good Cab Franc. It carries through and it shows a little bit of what it's got. It makes that wine. I'm excited to see this thing open up over the next, you know, 20, 30 minutes. And it's been open for hour and a half now, but it's not hitting its stride quite yet. I'm excited to see where this wine goes. Now, let's think about 2040. It is a closed wine as of right now. I could see the other 2030s, maybe 10 more years.
I'm not buying 2040.
But 2040 is a long time from now. But I think it's going to hit its stride another 5-6 years.
Kiss of the leather.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting the tar.
No. What about asphalt? No. Red currant? No. Yes. Red currant is the predominant fruit on that front palate. Maybe a little bit cherry. But I would, and red plum, a little bit of plum.
I like
but
plum.
It doesn't quite get fleshy enough yet on the front palate for me to go plum. Plum is almost, I mean, obviously you have the plum flavor, but plum is almost a mouthfeel thing for me. You know, where the fruit is a little bit riper and fleshier, and you can kind of feel that. Currant is a little more there, but not there. It's not as drippy, juicy. You know, and even though I don't like plums, it's still
there's a tinge of savoriness about the the currant. When we discussed fruit and front palate, currant savory,
mm-hmm.
Plum similar profile, more towards the sweet. Interesting. So dinner last week. Friends and Ma went, and she likes Merlot, and mm-hmm. It was just Kenny at Wings has decent wine choices by the glass, and she'll always have a Merlot, and I don't even know what it was, but she goes, this wine is made from plums. I said, what do you mean, Ma? She said, I can taste plum, mm-hmm. And I said, what you're doing is we've talked about different things when we do wine, and a couple times I've read reviews to her. You just picked out plum, which can express itself in Merlot. It can. And so for your listeners, if you're not able to do what we talk about, keep with it.
True.
Keep with it. I was shocked when Mom said that, and I tasted her Merlot. Fuck it, she was right. I was like, good for you, Mom. And she proceeded to have 3 glasses and...
Didn't taste a plum after that.
She had a great time.
This wine is an interesting one in the fact that people that love Italian wines are going to find something here. People that love French wines probably find something here. People that love Spanish wines are going to find something here. It is an interesting Euro cross-section.
I also think you're a Californian wine drinker. It's different, but because of the fruit in it, I think they'd love it too. I think this wine has a little something for everybody. Who wouldn't like this glass of wine? And I realize it's young. It seems to be intended to be set back. And it's you know, why not come call it $40? Let's say it's $40.
Sure.
It hits home for 40. You drink this and go, wow. I know, you paid $40 for this. It's like, yeah, I pay 40 for this again. I'm putting this in my queue.
I mean, yeah. Well, all of their stuff. Really, Scott, the legit Cabernet, that same price. Maybe even a few bucks cheaper. It really is something special. This, though, this is very, very uptown. It's interesting. It's complex. The complexity in this wine is amazing. But also, the complexity is amazing when you only have 2 grapes. Two varietals. In 50-50. And neither one of those varietals are really what is known to be grown in that region. You know, I normally, first of all, that area is a little bit more acidic soils. It's a lot of volcanic soils, most of it. I don't recall. I don't know that this, though, was all that volcanic, but often you're going to see a lot more acidity in the soils, and that's what you're tasting a lot through that minerality is the acidity coming out of the acidic soils. Let's just take a look here. Yeah. Let me just see what we got here. It was sandy with a slight presence of stone. Tufa soil. So that, I don't know what tufa soil is, but you definitely, though, I think there is a slight acidity in the soil, and you can taste that come through the wine. A lot of it, I mean, Sangiovese is acidic to begin with, but this wine yes. also has a little bit of that acidity that tightens it up, which is the big thing that's going to lessen over time and let everything else expand, you know? It's in balance, though, right now. I mean, this is a wine I think that you would enjoy better if you held it, which is a little more exciting because that shows a little higher quality.
And, you know, just reading a little bit about the process that they mm-hmm. go through, they do some interesting things. You know, they have field irrigation,
mm-hmm.
water drip for each plant, drip irrigation for the plants. The open top fermenters made of French Allier oak. So it's an open top fermenter style from oak. Probably pretty old school. Most of the open top makers through the fermenting process we're aware of are not using French Allier oak.
No, fuck no. Some of them are using fucking rain buckets as far as we can tell.
Well, it's, you know, some type of stainless steel barrel, metal barrel, maybe concrete.
Tin. Pine.
Well, it's okay to line it. Just take, it's leaking again. Just bring in, hey, didn't you need to get your bed lined on your truck?
Isn't that a kid's swimming pool? No. What's the tarp doing? Nothing. That's a 95 or 96 gallon trash can, isn't it? Maybe. That's not the way to do it.
What? Rubber is a neutral substance. That's why we put it in Magnum condoms.
What?
Hey, here at Fry Brothers. No, this isn't Wilfred. This is Fry Brothers. We have a new line of wine. Where we age the wine, not in barrels, Scott. And they're not small, really, but magnum-sized condoms. It's condom wine. It's fantastic.
Really?
That's right, yes. Adds a lot more minerality and earthy tones, we think. They're not used condoms. Don't be disgusting, Scott. But they're new condoms straight out of the package, yeah. We got a couple of them because, you know, my brother doesn't know how to use a condom.
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't know the tip. And so he had them inside out. So a few of the wines that are out there taste of lubricant.
And wouldn't you be worried about...
It's petroleum.
The spermicide affecting the biological activity in the wine?
That makes me think we might need to call the FDA and have a recall. It didn't occur to me that was the case. Maybe we should switch to sheepskin condoms. That's what I've always used.
Of course you have.
I don't have any. I've never had sex with someone, but if I was, I'd use sheepskin. It's like that's barely there.
Sheepskin condom.
Yes.
It's not a type of condom that you use to have sex with sheep. It's the material that the condom's manufactured from.
I appreciate you telling me that. Did you find that out because
I'm
the hard way?
I'm just trying to...
Save me the trouble.
Yes.
You're very considerate.
Your linguistic devices may be off. You may not understand what that means completely.
I always felt that it would be inappropriate to have sex with a sheep sheepskin condom. It's like a version of cannibalism in a certain sense. Don't you think so, Scott?
What?
That's right. You heard me. My God, those Fry Brothers are freaks, aren't they, Scott?
They're freaks.
I know. I was like, I was off stage. I was listening to that one. Holy shit, they fuck sheep.
Stage.
But what else am I supposed to say?
Well, I don't know.
There's a stage in Rob the Wine Guy's mind, as far as you know.
Back, I'm sure there's a lot of stage.
Well, next is a puppet show. Oh, it's not on the air, though. It's a pornographic puppet show.
Puppetry of the Penis, your favorite Broadway production.
What's that?
Your favorite Broadway production.
Oh, I'd go see that, yeah.
I think you've seen it many times.
Well, no, I do it myself. I can make a sailboat. Watch this, Scott.
I think it was a one-man show.
Isn't that beautiful? Now, this is what I call the hot dog in a bun.
The hot dog in a bun.
That's right. This is what I call the flagpole. Bring.
Jesus.
Oh, sound back, effects, folks.
Back to the wine.
Just reading the script here, Scott.
Ding.
Ding.
It's not a spittoon.
This is what I call the diving board. Pretty good, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, it was. No. You like that
no.
one. You like that one.
You can pre-select sound effect.
This is what I call the Greg Louganis. Ow. He hit his head on the diving board.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it was funny.
I thought he was smacking the back of somebody else's head.
I don't know what he does in his private life, so, you know.
No.
On the assumption that that might be true. But
I think there's a memoir. Oh, I think he has authored a memoir. I'm pretty certain.
It's fascinating.
I don't know if it would be fascinating or not. Mm-hmm. Talani Valsani,
yes.
Toscana.
Okay.
Beautiful wine. That's, if I had to use one word, I would use the word beautiful.
It's very descriptive.
But it's, what one word would you use, sir?
I need to think of a sip before I can ascertain the language, the linguistics. I would use the word authentic.
Mm.
And the reason why is the varietals are not necessarily Italian varietals, yet it tastes very Italian.
Fair.
In a good way. I mean, there's not a bad way that I can think of. I mean, but, well, Prosecco. But generally, it has that austere nature of Italian wines. No matter what they are, they always have just a little bit of austere notes to them. Have we ever had one that we would consider jazzy and obnoxious?
No,
not really. I mean, maybe occasionally you have a rogue junk Chianti made by Gabbiano or some shit like that. But those are just bad wines anyway.
That comes about as jazzy, though. Usually they just fall flat.
But yeah, they're made for the United States. They're just, you know, punk. But proper Italian wines always have a level of austerity to them. And austerity in wine, you might say, well, that makes it lean, that makes it bitter, that makes it this, that makes it that. I'm like, yeah, it does in a certain way, but in a good way. I like a wine to, A, remind me that it's wine. That helps. I mean, I don't want it to taste like blueberry muffin or something like that. I mean, I want it to taste like wine. I want it to, you know, but also it stays contained. There's no flabbiness to it. It has structure. The austerity is the structure. And the austerity, after time, gives way to beauty. You know? Beauty will be there. Right now, this is a wine's blossoming. And the fact that this winery, really, and what I really enjoy about it is, you have a young winery, 19-year-old vines at this point, producing so many wines across the label. What? 8 to 10, all red.
Yep.
Hallelujah. That are all, and we haven't had a few of them, but I've had 3 of them. The ones that we can get, we've had. And every single one of them, I've enjoyed immensely. I've really loved this one, and I really, really love the Legit. Those are fucking great. And the El Tasso is, for $20, an amazing steal. I just had it again. I've had it like 3 times. I just had it again maybe 2 weeks ago. Loved it.
Let's be honest. We were pushing back on that $300 or whatever price point on the 100% varietal Cab Franc.
If somebody offered me a glass, I'm going to try it.
Père Louis.
Yeah.
The Cab Franc shines through in this 50-50 blend.
Yeah, but it can't be this Cab Franc, can it?
It couldn't. No way is it the same Cab Franc.
No.
This is the lesser of the Cab Franc.
Well, yeah, but that's the question. How do you have lesser when you only have 19-year-old vines?
Well, it's an interesting point. They do like a pre-harvest green grape testing.
Okay.
To identify the better grapes, the better bunches off the better vines.
So it's kind of like a Baron Asleysen approach. They're finding the best clusters from the vines, and they're incorporating that into that wine?
No. Before harvest.
Yes.
When the grapes are not ripe.
Yeah.
They go and
identify
pick,
them.
Pick a single grape, not a bunch, a grape from okay. different clusters, from different bunches, from different vines.
Mm-hmm.
Record that, make their basis on this is going to be better than this one. That's their process. That's okay. how they're picking.
Well, effectively.
Which is the better grape that's going to go to the Père Louis versus the Val di Santa. And this is the lesser of their Cab Franc.
Well, that's not.
And it's beautiful how it comes through.
Well, Baron Asleysen is where you're selecting the best clusters to go into the top wine. That's what Baron Asleysen is. So essentially, they're using that same ideology.
But a different time frame.
It's tweaked. But, well, no, they do some pre-identification. It's not like they're just, here on the line they're doing sorting. It's a little bit before that. Because you can go around and partly because Riesling is on there late in the game anyway. But the idea is the same. You're picking the best of what's on the vine. Then what's left over goes into everything else. Right. But, yeah. Okay. I don't know if that's worth $300, but, you know, whatever.
Well, I know this. If this is their lesser line of Cab Franc, I want to know what the upper line tastes like.
The Cab Franc is really, but I can say that.
You've had the legit. You've had the Cab. You've had the Cab and you loved it, right?
Yeah.
They're taking the lesser of their Cab Franc to match with maybe the same quality legit as legit because it's similar price point.
Similar price point, yeah.
The legit, so wine.com right now, today, the Talani is $40. Mm-hmm. The legit is $45. But originally, the Talani was priced at $45, which we never see that. But the legit doesn't have a red line price on wine.com, which almost all of them do. Right?
I bought legit one time at under 30. So, but I think it was the 13 vintage is what I...
Yeah, that's 5 years ago. 5 years after this is the 18, the current vintage.
And I might have even bought some of the 15, because I think they're 13, 15, 18, I think is what I've been seeing. They've been skipping vintages on wine.com.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because I think it goes...
It's accessibility, probably, right? Mm-hmm.
This is a bigger seller, I think, than Legit, even though it shouldn't be. The Legit is fantastic, but...
What's a great purpose for this wine? You really want to share a special bottle of wine with someone and show them, look, you drink wine on a regular basis. Every once in a while, you should break the bank and spend a little more.
Well,
this is a great bottle to show that. This isn't $100. It's $40. But for a present for someone who hasn't stretched to go above their comfort range, you know, they're a regular wine drinker, but they want to buy their, whatever, their $10 to $15 to $20 bottle of wine. Stretch and see you can have something like this.
Well, what I would say is this is for the person that likes Italian wines but doesn't love Barolo, doesn't love Brunello. They're not necessarily the lover of Nebbiolo or Sangiovese, and that's understandable. Although, I mean, high levels of Sangiovese are wonderful, but not everybody likes Nebbiolo. They don't.
Mm-mm.
It's just a fact. I mean, and that's fine. But you still like certain aspects of Italian wine, and you want to buy better things that are better in Italian. You can't find the Super Tuscans anymore. I mean, they're or you don't want to spend $300.
But similarly with Barolo, many people aren't prepared to age a Barolo the way you need to.
Well, but also, you want to get on the ground floor of a winery that probably is going to cost twice this in another 5-10 years.
If you were $30 5 years ago...
Yeah, it's good.
4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's gone up 50%.
Yeah, this is probably, they're going to be charging $70 for this in another 4 or 5 years. That's just the way it's going to be. I can't, why wouldn't you? You should be able to get it out of it. As the vines get older and more mature, oh my God.
It should improve.
What they're going to start doing is branching off and having more Highline wines. I'm sure that's what the guy's goal is. You know, your baseline stuff, you're still going to have the El Tasso for your young stuff or whatever. But this is probably going to be a $100 bottle of wine. It's kind of like what, not really, because Penfolds, I don't know what the hell their bin series are. But, like, their bin 389. It used to be, like, the $24 bottle of wine in the bin 28. Well, at some point, they decided 389 was elite and it costs $80 now, where bin 28 still costs around 32. I don't know what happened to 389. It skyrocketed in price. I saw it actually on wine.com literally for a day, and then it was out of stock. Mm. So I haven't had it in years. I had it back in the day, like in the late 90s, and it was really good. But it must be something otherworldly anymore. But I think that's what you're going to see with something like this. It's going to be, the fucking reviews. If you're a review whore, you're a cherry picker like that, you're going to want this wine. Why this is in the top 100 shocks me. I don't think the 18 made it in the top 100, and it got a 90 fucking 5. Why? Because of ad space. But still, it should have. I mean, a 95 for a $30 bottle of wine, that's a top 10 wine. If it got that, if it was awarded that, it would have been something that spiked in price. It suddenly would have been $50-$60. That being said, there are a lot of different wineries that have similar things like this. And so...
Are there?
Yeah, in Italy? Oh, yeah.
Well, I get that there's similar things like this,
mm-hmm.
but... That
this is a, this,
are like this in the glass?
Yeah.
I don't know about that,
well,
man.
Well, no, great wines. In oh, like yeah, a,
there's a lot of great Italian wines.
No, listen. Listen to what I'm saying.
Oh, go ahead.
Wines that are a Bordeaux style in nature. There's a lot of great stuff in the sub-$60 range. You just got to look for them. And when you find them, they're all on wine.com. A lot of these wines are really, really special. And what you probably should be putting your money into. Don't buy a Napa Valley Floor Cabernet for $60. Go over to Italy. Buy Le Macchiolole, which is a red blend. I think it's Syrah and a few other things. It got a 95 from the Spectator. It's $45 right there. Twenta de Biserno, Campo de Sasso. It's, once again, a Bordeaux-centric red, 91 from the Spectator. It goes on and on from there. There's all these little different great reds. Tomasi makes great reds.
Mm-hmm.
Planeta, we've had them on there. They have good stuff. They're Sicilian, but they have good stuff. A lot of little niche, little cab, blends of some sort that are really, really good that you should be spending your money on. You should be, if you're going to buy Camus tomorrow, it doesn't taste anything like it, but it's a lot better wine. You should buy 55 bottles of Tolani Legit Cabernet.
Well,
it's a better wine. It's just better. It's just a better Cabernet.
If you do drink Camus, which is fine, but for the price, there's you a should pill buy for, some legit.
There's a pill
you
for
should,
that.
You should buy some Val d'Isonti.
You should just buy the Val d'Isonti. Or the legit.
Fantastic, folks.
Well, yeah. It's worth your money. So, folks, we're going to take a break, but then be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So, on tonight's potpourri, One thing we want to note before we really get into the actual topic, which is not all that interesting.
I think it's going to be very interesting.
The nose is evolving. It's more black licorice, brooding, richer at this point.
And what I noted, drawing, listen, I drew attention to Rob that the nose is evolving. With a more prominent licorice nature, it's bringing along a floral element. Hour and a half? Now we're 2 hours on the decant, maybe?
Yeah.
And it's continuing to evolve. A lesser wine, the nose would fall off after 2 hours in the decant.
Mm-hmm.
This is evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Also off air, we were talking about... I'd be nervous to age this to 2040. I'd be nervous to age this to 2030. On a recent episode, we did a Syrah that had fallen off. It was in cellared wine by me, and it wasn't. It's a premium producer, at least in our opinion, it's a premium producer.
No, it is. Held it about 4 years too long.
It seemed whatever the number was. It was plainly it had fallen. It was past its peak.
And its peak, I mean, was it a Grenache or a Syrah? It was a Grenache.
Excuse me.
I think the anticipation was it would be a 14, 15-year wine.
It should have been.
But
now
it was
now,
more like an 8 to 10.
Now, it did travel with me.
It did.
To get into the cellar conditions it's in now. So was that part of it? We'll never know.
Yeah.
It wasn't mistreated, but it wasn't cellared in any way properly,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't heated and then
you always put back to... you always run the risk when you're aging wines, and that's one reason why you have multiple bottles. So say you had this in your cellar, you wanted to collect this and you want to store it. Say you bought 6 bottles, right? Well, you're going to open one after 5 years, see where it's at. You're going to open one at 7 years, see where it's at. That's the point. You don't hold all 6 bottles, 15 years. Why would you do that? So you're going to cycle them through. And if you say after 7 years, well, I'm going to wait for another 8 years on this stuff, then you do that. But you do need to have enough bottles for something like this that's reasonably priced, mind you, and that you might have a little bit of unsurety about. If you're buying a vintage port, it's going to last. If you're going to buy a top growth Bordeaux, it's going to last. But something like this, you might be a little bit unsure of it, but you can afford to buy multiple bottles and taste one 5 years out and see where it's at. Maybe you buy 3. Maybe you drink one after 5 years and see what you want to do with the rest of the other two.
I'd want to drink one as soon as I fucking got it. Right now.
But that's how you do that, really. I mean, you've got to be, you can do that. But the potpourri tonight. I'm going to name a varietal, Scott.
Uh-oh.
And I want you to provide me a pairing, just not a dish, just a single thing. Okay. All right? Like if I said Chardonnay, you'd say asparagus, something like that.
Not a bad choice.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't think... why not think outside the box? And we always talk about mains, but...
Well, I'm just...
Veggies.
Just in general.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter really what that is. You're just going to provide that. You're not going to sauce it up. You're going to be very basic, very simple, just very precise, okay? Because sometimes you'll get a little crazy. All right.
Let's go crazy.
And we should be a little bit more off kilter because we know like Cabernet, beef, whatever. Mm. Zinfandel, meat, whatever. Get a little bit off the beaten track so people can get a little bit different things. So I'm going to start off, Scott. Gamay. Has to be with food, by the way.
So.
Can't say, I'm just drinking it by itself. Gamay.
You know, when we talk Gamay, you know what I think of. That beautiful little Gamay, 100% Gamay sparkler.
But that's not what I mean.
I'm not saying that. That's what I think of.
I know.
We talked about brunch.
I'm talking about Beaujolais.
Yeah. Beaujolais.
Not Nouveau, though. A good one.
Beaujolais.
It's very easy.
One thing. I have to go. This is
Be simple.
Let it sat on there. I'm going to be simple. I'm going to go roasted chicken.
You can do roasted chicken. I was thinking also turkey. It's a good substitute for Thanksgiving, for Pinot. It might have a little brighter fruit, depending on the Pinot. Although, if you drink Lucky Star Pinot, it doesn't have brighter fruit. So, you know, we have actually that in the queue. So, be very excited. So, Scott, give me one.
I'm not very excited about Lucky Star in the
It the could queue. Be your Lucky Star.
You missed that.
Yeah.
You fell short of the mark there.
I'm not Madonna. I'm not a lady. So, go ahead.
I love Madonna. I don't care whether you're a lady or not.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to take this away from you, and you, since you said turkey, you don't get to use that again.
Okay.
Grüner Veltliner.
I wouldn't say Grüner Veltliner with turkey.
How dare you? Yes, you would. You've quoted that on the show so many times that that's what... Yeah. It's a turkey. Thanksgiving. Holiday wine.
Well, actually, Grüner Veltliner would go good with ham. I mean, it would. A spiral sliced ham. Shockingly enough. It would.
Easter Sunday ham.
Yeah.
Grüner Veltliner.
It'd be lovely with that.
That's a good call.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I love a Grüner Veltliner. We
it's a nice wine. Well, cheaper ones are okay, but...
Carlisle's winter order is coming in, and the Grüner Veltliner's coming.
Scott, what I'm going to throw at you is Pinotage. It was not a wine that we drink much on the show. We have one in the queue. We'll have to get to soon.
I'm going to stick with South Africa. Henke's beef dried sausage.
Okay, like a off kilter kind of gamey sausage. Yeah.
What did he refer to it as? It's the beef sausage that's packed with pork fat.
It's minerally. I don't remember what it's called, but I know what you mean. That actually is accurate because Pinotage is a smoky, slightly off kilter kind of red. Some can have a little bit of a rubber bandy quality to them, like Contra Costa Zins. But yeah,
Boar Weiss.
And it has different spices to it. But no. It's
coriander.
Yeah. Sausage, that kind of odd sausage would be a good pairing with Pinotage.
Boar Weiss.
Okay. Boar. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know what you mean. Boar Weiss. Yeah. That's a good pairing. Good job. What you got for me?
What I have for you is your favorite rosé. Just kidding. Lately, I don't think it's quite, for the show terms, can we say if we've been on a kick? I certainly want to go on a kick and grow my kick. Uruguayan, specific country and source, tannin.
A lazy person would say beef, but I'm not going to. I'm going to say wild boar.
Who can get on fucking wild boar?
Okay.
Are a lot of people from Texas listening to the show? I mean,
okay, you don't want to do that? I'm fine.
No. I think you're being a bit...
A really, eclectic. Really, really well done charred pork chop.
Okay.
You know, really well done.
Thick, and I'm falling in.
The fat cap is you know, you've rendered.
Got the ability to get that high temperature grill on it. Get a good sear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little smoke to it.
Bone in.
Yeah. Yes.
We haven't talked about this before, but my heart stopped beating for a moment. My son and his wife are headed out to Vegas for a little getaway, and he was like, hey, can you send me some restaurants? And we talked about this. Yeah, closed, man.
Oh, did?
It's gone.
Wow.
It's gone. It wasn't like last week.
Well, they try to revolve. I mean,
it's been like 3, 4, 5 years, man.
Well, I think that any property, if it's there too long, gets stale and they just Yeah. But Charlie Palmer's The Wine Angels is gone?
Yeah. Gandhi. Wow. Yeah, that double cut pork chop meal is one of the, but the double cut pork chop meal at Charlie Palmer's was one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. It was just so fucking awesome.
Palomino.
I'm not familiar with that varietal, friend.
It's white. It's predominantly in white sherry.
Gotcha.
Dry sherry.
I've never had it as a single varietal.
Thank
you. So are you saying dry sherry?
Salty. No, I mean, you can. There are some California producers that used to. Rosenblum made a Palomino. Tastes like shit, but.
But dry sherry.
So very dry lean. Sherry. Very dry.
Jimenez?
No, that's different.
But a dry sherry.
Dry sherry. Dry sherry. Very dry. So tastes like the sea.
I'm going to be upscale.
If you lick the beach. Yes.
Dry sherry. I'm going to go with... sushi. Sashimi, specifically. Not rolls. Nice, fatty.
Oh, no.
With good ginger.
Oh, no.
And
no,
then I'm
no,
going to drink it with sherry.
No, 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 no.
Hey!
It's too dry. There's no salt content. If you went shellfish, oysters, things like that, maybe. But if you're talking about sashimi, say you have a fatty fish, it doesn't matter what it is. Oh, Lord, no. I mean, that's a Chardonnay. That's something with buttery.
No.
You could even do some Sauvignon Blancs, but no, you can't. No, no.
Have you ever had sake?
Yes.
It's not Chardonnay like.
Do you
it's,
drink a lot of sake with...
I drink, and I like my sake warm.
Yeah.
I love sake.
No, you don't want that. It's too briny, and you want to match brine with brine.
No. Why?
Have you ever been in a sushi restaurant where they offered sherry?
Yeah.
Where? Yeah.
I don't know about dry sherry. Sure.
Any kind of sherry with...
Yeah.
That's what Asahi is for. Or Sapporo.
Oh, you don't... That's a mistake.
No, it's not.
Better off having... just some whatever crappy wine they have than having you Sapporo.
Failed. You
with,
failed
with sake.
On that one. That's, oh, bad. Give me one so it can be done properly.
You cannot say chocolate.
Okay.
Tawny port.
I wouldn't say chocolate with tawny port.
It's good because you can't. You're not allowed.
I wouldn't. I'm good. I don't need to.
It's okay. You're not allowed. Yeah, because chocolate and port don't go together.
Not tawny port. That's chocolate and vintage port.
Oh, Lord. But you wouldn't know that because you're away. Dumb. Go away.
Peanut brittle. That's one thing you could do.
Peanut brittle?
Not many people drink that with that, but you could.
Not many people eat peanut brittle.
Caramel.
That's where I would go. And I should have said, you can't say chocolate. You can't
well,
say caramel.
What do you think of peanut brittle? Is that
I would have thought you would
I mean,
have been
if you're at your grandmother's house and you have a bottle of tawny port, she's going to have peanut brittle. I don't like peanut brittle. It's too sticky, but still, whatever.
You're too sticky.
He can be. That's true, Scott.
I would have thought that you'd have been a little more venturesome and you would have paired it with a food item.
That is a food item. You eat
no,
it.
No, it's not. It's a dessert item. It's
oh, you want me to pair it with a food item?
Peanut brittle is not a food item.
Do you eat? You drink tawny port with a lot of dishes?
I'm just saying. I thought that's the game we were playing.
Sushi. There
the
we go.
Game we were playing.
Sushi. I want to drink my tawny port with sushi.
You gave me dry fucking sherry.
Yeah, you could have said shellfish, oysters. That would have been interesting. I mean, it's boring, but that's correct.
No.
Yes.
I'm going to have dry sherry.
Peel and pulled shrimp.
First of all, we've already established nobody drinks dry
no,
sherry.
No, don't.
You accuse me of wearing...
Not unless they're about to have a stroke. Then they'd be like, it tastes great. No. Nobody drinks that.
You accuse me of wearing 1974 flannel pajamas going to the gym because I drank dry sherry.
I
would drink dry sherry and I enjoyed it. I did enjoy that. What was it?
If you drink
XO?
If you drink dry sherry, that you and your wife or your husband sleep in single beds with nightstands between you. That's yes. You don't share a bed.
No, if
you're very British. That's all I can say.
No, you're not British.
Hello. Good on. Good day. How are you?
You're not British. You beat the trend on COVID. You sleep in separate twin beds with plexiglass between you.
Yes. I'm going to have myself an aperitif. I'm going to have dry sherry. Is either that or a tomato juice.
Tomato sandwich.
I have a tomato juice.
Could I have a tomato sandwich? Jesus. Would you pick the seeds out of it for me, please?
No.
What would you pair food-wise with port?
Oh, port? Food-wise?
Mm-hmm.
With a tiny port?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody's doing that, but...
Sometimes,
a peanut butter banana sandwich. I don't know. I mean, it's tiny port. It's not made to drink with food.
Wait, would the bread be toasted?
I mean, okay. If you're going to do that, I guess.
No, actually.
French toast.
Peanut butter banana sandwich?
Mm-hmm.
Toasted bread? Oh, yeah. Pumpernickel?
Yeah, I mean, you could do that.
It would be fucking delicious with port. Really more like a dessert, but that's okay.
It always has a dessert element to it. So.
Peanut butter banana sandwiches are fucking delicious.
I know they are. My kids love them.
I'm not a banana person, but I forgot about that. But I always toasted. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
One more time. I win the game and you're the loser. So give me another one. Palomino. Jesus Christ.
Since so.
Made this one time.
Pretty easy.
I'm going a different way than what you would do. Made this one time. It had
corn on the cob.
Strawberries and habaneros, and I made a strawberry habanero. It was really like a jelly, but I used it as a glaze, but I made it from scratch that day, the same day.
We're saying once a simple food.
I'm telling you what I'm pairing.
You can't have a glaze. No glaze.
This has a glaze.
Glaze is denied. Your glaze
strawberry,
is...
Strawberry, habanero glazed, grilled,
no.
Whole salmon.
Well, you can say salmon. Salmon's fine, but you can't have any of the glazes.
Listen.
The glaze is rejected.
You're rejected.
Salmon is correct, though. Salmon, since so, is an unusual pairing with salmon. Let's just forget the rest
but
of it.
But it's delicious. But particularly with something a little spicy... Since so is good with spicy.
Well, depending on how you prepare it.
We've talked about this before. Particularly, like, the...
It's a Pinot alternative.
The iteration of Sino, well, Since so we love
some.
Turley has a really affordable Since so.
Yeah, their Since so's good.
We just love it. It's a little on the lighter side. Wish it had a little more body. But the actuality of it is, it kind of has a Pinot...
Yeah.
Almost a rosé... Freshness about it.
There's a freshness, yes.
It really does.
It's somewhere between a Pinot. It has a Pinot usefulness to it, but it almost has a Gamay weight to it.
Beaujolais, Gamay thing.
And but yes, then it has that freshness like a rosé.
But why I said that specific dish is we've talked about Since so, particularly that Turley Since so. It's good with spicy. No, you and that dish. It sounds like it's this. Ass hot thing.
Yeah, well, you're not allowed to have the glaze, so it's not hot.
And we're having that.
No glaze.
Here. I win. You lose.
No.
It sounds like it's this incredibly hot dish, but because
there's no glaze on the salmon, it's not hot.
Strawberry and habanero are best friends.
No.
Plus, when you grill it on the salmon, the oils kind of calm that habanero down.
I'll allow you to have.
It was fucking delicious.
One lemon slice on your salmon. That's it. No habanero, strawberry. No, sorry.
One lemon slice.
One, just one, not two. No dill, no dill.
First of all,
no butter.
First of all, James wouldn't put up with that.
I don't care.
Your alter ego Wilfred would question why you're using a single lemon slice, and he would question even Wilfred would question your manhood about that.
Why? There's no manhood in how you prepare salmon. If you talk to your buddies about how you prepare salmon, then you tuck your sack is what you do, because that's not a manly thing to do. You can eat salmon because it's good for you, and maybe you like the taste, but you don't talk to your buddies about how you prepare salmon. Not a manly thing, Scott. I know you don't understand that because you tuck your sack and dance around like a lady. Like a lady.
Dude looks like a lady.
Any kind of preparation of salmon is off limits. It's not manly. It's just not.
Yes, it is.
It's no.
Real men cook with habaneros.
Real men, do they?
Yeah.
Real men that are trying to compensate for their very small acorn-like penis.
They don't do it with habaneros because
yeah.
Men with acorn-like penises tend to touch themselves. If you cook with habaneros, that shit cures you of that the first time you ever cook with habaneros.
Don't you wash your hands? Are you jerking off while you cook?
I
separate the two, Scott.
Do you think
it's not hygienic to jerk off while you cook?
Do you think
it's very
that
inappropriate? I'm
washing
not gonna,
your hands.
I'm not gonna eat your clam chowder. That's for sure.
Anything ever. Related to habanero?
I'm just saying. I don't jerk off when I cook.
You don't have to jerk off. You have to just simply.
Why would
pop
I touch my wiener or dick while or cock while I'm cooking?
While you're cooking,
that's a bit perverted.
You Scott. Might know. You might need to take a piss
while you're cooking.
You would. Stop the cooking and you would go to the bathroom and you would urinate.
Yeah, but I'd wash my hands.
If you used habaneros, you would not touch yourself.
Yes, I would.
See, you would.
After I wash my hands, Scott, I would wash them. I wash my hands before I touch myself because I don't know where I've been.
Get habaneros on your hands. You can't wash them good enough.
I can't. What if I... I'm wearing... In my story, I'm wearing rubber gloves.
That's a good way to prepare any habanero dish.
No, I wear rubber gloves when I touch myself, Scott. It's a difference thing. I don't know where I've been down there too. Yeah, I don't.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't want to get sores on my hands. It's inappropriate.
What about when you drink dry sherry?
That's when I'm sleeping in a twin bed, but it's not. You know, whenever they wake up across from me and realize that I've stolen or killed their spouse and I'm sleeping in their twin bed, they're not all that disappointing because they were going to do that too. So, you know, they drink sherry for Christ's sake.
Well,
dry sherry.
No, you know? When you drink dry sherry.
What about it?
Only on your dates?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Dates.
Figs?
No.
Plums? Dried plums?
That suggests the other party is part of the soiree. Let's just say that they're not there willingly. But a little rope and the right kind of chair can make anybody a willing participant.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, folks, we're going to take a break, but be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So Scott's bemoaning the fact that, you know, he is second fiddle to Wilfred. But anyway, the Tolani Valtasanti red wine, Cabernet and Cab Franc from Tuscany, Chianti Classico, to be specific, in Italy. Scott, your numerical score for this wine. He's thinking, folks.
No, I'm thinking about how I'm going to describe it. I know what my number is.
Ooh.
I'm likely overscoring it a little bit, but it's because how much I love it, and it's because how much I love that it's ready right fucking now. I love the expression of these two varietals that have such really Cab Sauv and Cab Franc to put them together 50-50. I can think of a lot more combinations of varietals that are best friends than these two. Was really skillfully done because if you got one or the other wrong, then it's going to be overpowered. This was one of the best 50-50 blends I think I can ever remember that had so many characteristics of both grapes.
You do notice them both there. And the fact is, you don't normally see Cab and Cab Franc as a 50-50.
They're just not best friends. And no. It doesn't mean they're opposite or anything like that. It's like...
Their names are similar, but they're not similar.
It's like, what do you blend together? Zin and Petit Sirah. We like Zins.
Cab and Merlot.
Cab and Merlot.
Yep.
Right? And it's... But it's like... Yes. And... The other thing that I love about this wine that we really didn't talk about, the wonderful way it's oaked. I can't recall a wine that had the minerality showing and paired with the oak the way this did.
But the oak isn't really something you'd talk about because it's just an integral part of the wine. You don't notice it throughout the wine.
And that's...
That's
exactly my point.
Yep.
And...
It just provides structure, nothing that's else.
We played a game earlier where I said one word and I said beautiful and you said authentic. And that's what's... Yes. To me, that's what's the most authentic of this wine as an Italian-made wine, mm-hmm. The oaking. It's perfectly done in the Italian method. I'm going 93. It's probably a little high, which I don't care what Rob thinks. Why I'm going 93 is because of those two factors. We've talked enough about the wine and what it is and how beautiful it is, but why I'm scoring it that high is they've taken this pairing of two varietals that you don't see paired together. They're not best friends, and they made them not just best friends, but it's like they've been married for 80 years. They're that couple that they've been married for 80 fucking years. Mm-hmm. And the quality of this as a cellar selection wine that is so fucking ready to drink right now. Mm-hmm. I would be, if somebody gifted me a case of this, I would have an internal struggle every day to not drink a bottle of it because I would want it now because I know how good it is now.
And now on to me. Scott made a very good point. The fact that, and I agree with this wholeheartedly, that Cab Franc and Cab Sav are not necessarily perfect bedfellows. They just are different. I mean, Cab Franc is a little bit more off kilter. The fact that they have a similar name doesn't speak at all about them. And what they did here was mar the two really well together and play off each other. And that's not very easy. Normally, you're going to see Cab Franc as 20%, 30% max. 30% is high. You know, normally it's sub 20. But here, they've kind of encompassed a wine that's a little bit fickle in just the way you'd see it. You said, I actually thought I had Petit Verdot in it. I went looked at it again and today. I went 50-50. Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I thought it was like a five. I thought it was a five wine. I'm not sure why. I must have been looking at something else or sniffing glue. I can do that. It's fun. But the technical elements to this wine are so impressive, given, you know, what it's made from, that you kind of step back and go, wow, that's an achievement. It's an achievement to make a wine this good on vines that have been planted so recent. That's an achievement. It's exciting when I look at this winery knowing that in 20 years from now, when Scott's 110, we're really going to be impressed by this wine because it's going to be twice the price, three times the price, four times the price. It's going to be what we remembered as, you know, remember back in the day when, you know, you could buy Volta Sante reasonable. Now it's like ultra premium. That's what I see that in this wine. For me, my score for this wine is a 92. If you want to give it a 93, you rock it all out. I think that eventually, if it opens up just right and that front palate susses out a little bit, shows a little bit more of that plum, a little bit riper on the front, you're going to see a 94-point wine, maybe a 95-point wine. I don't know. We'll see how it all shakes out and the complexity goes. I think that when we revisit this in 5-10 years, you're going to see a wholly different wine. I think it's going to improve. 2040, that's a long time from now.
It's a long time. We didn't talk about this real quick. What would you pair this with? What would what food, what meal could rise to the level of this bottle of wine? You need a special meal. You need a special meal, son.
I've had a few dishes that, you know, Frank makes a thing or two.
Brujol?
Yeah, the Brujol would be fine with this. You know, they have this this restaurant in Louisville called no.
You know what Massalaria does that we need to try? I mean, he makes Brujol
porchetta?
Too. The porchetta.
Yeah, it looks good, doesn't it?
Porchetta.
Yeah.
That porchetta, slow and slow on your...
Tell people about what porchetta is.
Porchetta is... So we go to a Italian butcher nearby, and he's
not Italian.
Well worth the price of admission, and he does some different things. We haven't had his porchetta yet. Porchetta is traditionally a Christmas dish that it's depending on the region on different things, but it's essentially a rolled meat, pounded pork with the recipe I made that from my first exposure to porchetta was Jamie Oliver. It was with duck livers. So you made a stuffing with duck liver, and you kind of smeared the duck liver along the pounded meat, and then you had a stuffing that you rolled with that. And so you've got three layers. You've got the pounded pork, the smeared liver, and then the traditional stuffing. And I winged it. Me and my buddy did it, and it was fucking fantastic. And I cheated. I used duck liver and goose liver, and it was so fucking good. God, it was sin. Fully good.
Yeah.
And I don't know, probably traditionally the goose liver is blended with the stuffing. That's not how I did it, but that's the only time I've ever made the dish. And I would love to see how he does it. I would guess it's more traditional, that it's just the pounded pork with the stuffing, but it's going to involve duck liver.
As a binding agent, really, but
But it's also you release that minerality into the meat.
Mm-hmm.
So what it allows you to do is have, I mean, let's face it, a lot of pork doesn't have great qualities when you relate it to lamb or beef, and you can introduce some different things to it by the use of that liver. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is liver is so good for you, man.
But the Tolani Valdesante.
What meal would you put with it?
The porchetta sounds pretty good right now.
Yeah.
I mean...
You said
different. Brujol, something like that, but...
It deserves a special meal.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. This is the wine, the headliner. I mean, hell, you throw it with a steak.
If I was going to throw it with a steak, what comes to mind to me is... a whole beef tenderloin that you really treated in a special way. I don't know, peppercorn, roasted. Mm-hmm. You did something special to a tenderloin.
Oh, yeah.
It just deserves next level. This is a really special wine. Folks, listeners, if you have a friend that you're trying to bring along in the red wine journey and you their birthday's coming up or an anniversary or something like that, it's $40.
This is what you get them.
I'm going to tell you right now, this goes to the top of my list on gifting a bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm. If the person enjoys wine. Yes.
We talk about this all the time. Sometimes life deserves a little more than a $20 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
This is a $40 bottle of wine. I think Rob's right. Maybe it won't be 5 years, but this. It's going to be a $100 bottle of wine.
I spent $35 on this one, but still.
This is going to be
a
$100 bottle of wine.
Eventually, it is. So, with that, Hall of Fame, tip of the cap to Talani, quite frankly, because I know that their good stuff is good. But for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver, we will bid you adieu. But see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.